Hey, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Monday, April 20th, 2020, and I think Dave is still there. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hello, Melody.
Yes, you are. I heard a little click. I wasn't sure, but I'm glad you are. We got a, I want to say, fun fact-filled program, but it's not fun, but it is certainly information packed today. And I think what we're witnessing in the oil industry is probably epic, Dave. I mean, it's hard to grasp and to really see what's going on and where we're headed. I mean, to me, and we'll talk about this, and Dave can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think when you have a contract, an oil contract, hit a penny and then some negative territory, I think that's epic. And big things are going to happen from this.
It doesn't happen that very often.
I don't think it ever has.
In fact, this was the first time in history.
But, I mean, I don't think people appreciate what happens next. You talk about, you know, 2.5 million jobs that were created. A large majority of those are probably now lost. When you look at the debt, I mean, it's such a huge picture.
They have been lost. I believe they've all been lost.
I mean, the repercussions. I mean, this is. I know the listeners don't like the word global, but hello. So let's go ahead and get to see what gold has done today. We have gold. It's up $8. And I'll tell you what, if you guys don't get it yet, sell all your gold. I could use it. Because if you don't get it, if you don't get it now about what's going to be happening, and what it's going to be doing to your dollar, and how much you need to get out of paper, you never will get it. So, like, what's the point? Gold today, up $8 at $1,695. Silver's up 3 pennies at $1,532. Platinum was down 5 at $779. Palladium was up 24 at $2,244. The dollar today, it was up. Go figure.
Go figure.
0.29 at 99.98. So, you know, we know the petrodollar. How is this all going to play out? I mean, you got governments around the world tonight. They'll be scrambling, along with all their oil buddies to see what they can do to just stem the bleeding. Crude oil. Well, this show's down 55 at 0.26. WTI 0.26, and we know it hit a penny and below. I saw one report. I don't know if I can pull it up today, Dave. It was a Portfolio Wealth Global. It said, you talk about the futures contract expires today. Prices a barrel below at zero. You can purchase it for negative 6.75. Negative 6.75.
It was at negative 37 plus.
Yeah.
Earlier.
I mean, we're going to talk about it and have a little more sense on it. But you got, you know, you talk about the Middle East, how that's been changed for good. You have all your Russian, you know, Iran, Saudi, Mexico, USA, Russia, China, the Persian Gulf countries are all going to be trying to figure out what they're going to do as the industry goes bust. I mean, you've got entire economies that are all built and run on oil. And we're just not talking about the 2.5 million jobs here. You're talking about tens of millions, millions of jobs, and the hundreds of millions of families. It's all up in smoke. This person said it's apocalyptic. So, paper markets today, they kind of shrugged it off, but I can't even imagine what they're going to be tomorrow. I think tomorrow we'll be back to the 1,000-point drops. You have the Dow down 592 points, down 2.44% at 23,650. You have the NASDAQ down 1% at 89 points, at 8,560. The S&P down 51 points, 2,823. 10-year yield, 0.63. I'd be out filling up on gasoline today, folks. That's where I'm heading after the program. And I always keep my trucks on full. But there's a little gap there. I'm going to go fill them up. Japan was down 1.15%. London and Germany were up just fractionally. 10-year yield, 0.63%, down 4.28%. Can't imagine where the yields will be tomorrow. But yet, hey, that stock market was getting stronger. The fear and greed index, we moved all the way up to 42. That's all it takes. That's all that people care about. If you ask the person on the street about oil, they don't have a clue. Not a clue. They're so distracted by so many other things. So to tell you about how it unfolded today, you know, and I'm not even sure, Dave, I mean, this isn't their lowest level in more than 30 years. It's their lowest level ever, I believe.
It's true. Yeah, yeah. It's 30... lowest in 30 years at around lunchtime.
Yeah.
Or mid-morning.
Yeah. So the spread between the May and June contracts, known as the front month and second month, is now the widest in history. You know, there's little demand for gasoline from refineries. So I would think that gasoline, Dave, well, don't you think gasoline might be a shortage? Is that possible?
I guess theoretically, yes. In reality, I don't know. I suspect that if demand were suddenly to surge for whatever reason, all this oil now sitting sitting on tankers that producers are being asked to pay rather than being paid. We live in interesting times.
Well, I would think, too, when our largest refinery is owned by the Saudis, they got a little bit of control there. We can't forget about that. But I would think that if the refineries can't, if they're not getting any money for, yeah, if they begin to open up counties across the country, yeah, you're going to have a massive demand all of a sudden for gasoline. So we just might have that. So, yeah, there's a ton of crude out there, isn't there, Dave?
Yeah, you got... Yeah, there is. You have this global head of commodity strategy at RBC Capital, Halima Croft. She said there's still a lot of crude on the water right now. Those are the barrels on the tankers I referred to a minute ago. She said that's going to refineries that don't need it and now probably don't want it. Pandemic has dealt a severe blow to economic activity around the world and just now sapped the demand for oil. although OPEC and its allies finalized a historic agreement earlier this month to cut production by roughly 10 million barrels a day. Well, that was beginning May 1st. Many argue that that still won't be enough to counter the fall-off in demand, and certainly after today, we can see how that's so. The International Energy Agency is warning that that demand the rest of just April could be 29 million barrels a day lower than 1 year ago, hitting a level last seen in 1995. ANZ's Daniel Hines says that one of the reasons behind the crater in U.S. crude prices is the impending expiration of the May futures contract tomorrow. That's what Melody was alluding to earlier. In a normal market, the spread between the spot price and the one-month forward futures contract is only around 40 to 50 cents a barrel. At the moment, it's as high as 8 to 10 bucks. Actually, it's higher than that now because those figures were as of mid-morning today. They're probably at least double that. And significantly, Hines believes that oil prices are likely to remain under pressure over at least the next month or so.
Well, you know, this collapse in demand that we've seen is going to be bigger than any recorded since oil became a global commodity. You have, did I see 60% of the energy? Well, let me touch on that here in just a few minutes. Oil prices. The decline in global consumption in April alone will be, well, I mean, all these numbers that we got this morning, Dave, they're all, you know, different than what they are now. But the oil and gas industry, it provides almost 60% of the world's energy. 60% of the world's energy. And tomorrow is going to be a real interesting day. We'll see, you know, we'll be beginning to get more of the numbers to see how, what are the true impacts. And you know, and again, we're back to the debt, the credit, all these issues. And yet our government wants to continue. They're on a new deal, $370 billion loan program. Unfortunately, small businesses aren't getting the money, but here's another $370 billion for whoever are. I actually saw the most disgusting headline. Was it the, who is that billionaire, the one that does the Branson?
Oh, yeah, Richard. You know, Virgin little, Airlines.
Yeah, he's begging for a bailout. He's a billionaire. Billionaire.
We'll talk about it in a minute. So is United again. Beyond what they've gotten,
you know. But hey, here's a paltry $350 billion for the people. But again, the talks, $370 billion in the loan programs for small businesses. These talks came after the Paycheck Protection Program, which offers forgivable loans to small businesses if they can get it, which most of them can't. Pretty much what I understood is if you had a good relationship, if you had a buddy in the banking that really helped you get the funds, you got it. But those who just did the applications and so forth and thought they were doing the right thing, they didn't. So it always does help to have friends in high places. You'll get your loans. But the Democrats rejected a proposal to refill the fund about 2 weeks ago. I mean, it's the same old baloney. Another $60 billion would go to the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program. Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary, said the program will not include the Democrats' push for state and local government funding, which the Democrats are still pushing for. You know they're going to get it. You know the state and local governments are going to get it because all their pension plans are going to... They're already underfunded. They're already belly up. So anyway,
here's what gets me. The first round, the $350 billion PPP. Essentially, the queue was a first come, first served queue by bank. Now, logistically, I'm not quite sure how this could happen, but I'm sure that it could, albeit with somewhat of a delay in getting payments out to businesses. Why doesn't this next round require banks essentially to rank who gets this next round based on the size of the business, the number of employees they have, or the amount of loan they're requesting from low to high, so that for a change, the biggest loan requesters, many of them national chains with hundreds of millions, if not billions, in assets and a couple thousand employees. We'll talk a little bit more about one or two of them in a couple minutes. I mean, to the extent, the politics requires their participation in this, let them get to the bottom of the line and let this money get to the small, the truly small businesses, many of whom, it's said, have a lifeline of 4 to perhaps 8 weeks before they close. And not temporarily, that's forever. Their doors aren't just going to be shut and locked, they're going to be nailed over. So we're hearing different things about this bill now. The Senate earlier, as of last night, was hopefully going to take it up today, but it looks as though that'll happen tomorrow, with perhaps the House coming on board on Wednesday for a vote, getting it to the president's desk. Trump did say he was in favor of aid for state and local governments, but he said that would come in a future relief package. So,
the real problem is the real problem is America's bankrupt itself. And all they are doing is biding time. It's kind of like trying to feed 100 chickens with a handful of grain. And you have everybody scrambling for, and it's just not enough to feed everybody. It's not enough to keep everybody, and to think that it would be enough to keep everybody in business and that it would filter down and so forth. It's a pipe dream. It was just enough to keep the natives quiet for a short period of time. And we're going to have to be quiet for about 2-3 minutes because we're heading into a break right now. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csctalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. You know, we continue to talk about the various loan programs and everything, and then again, we're bankrupt. You know? And I was telling Dave during the break, I have all the, you know, there's a couple of businesses that they're toting on mainstream media about Shake Shack. They're returning $10 million of a small business loan. Well, how much did they get?
10.
Okay. Why did they even apply for it? And why did they even bother applying for it and tie it up?
Well, they needed it, apparently, according to them, before they received commitments in other equity far exceeding the $10 million.
Yeah, they got $150 million. I don't know. It's just in an equity offering. That's debt. It's a loan. Promise to pay. Are you all right, Dave? It sounded like you fell over.
No, that was me. I didn't quite fall over. I fell forward. Just like, oh.
Okay. Well, we hear you. We hear you. United Airlines, they posted a $2.1 billion first quarter loss, Dave.
Yeah, it's rather dramatic. Today they announced they posted a $2.1 billion loss for the first quarter. That's its biggest since 08. Of course, as the pandemic has driven down demand, travel demand, to the lowest level in decades. The airline said it's applied for up to $4.5 billion in government loans on top of about $5 billion in federal payroll grants and loans it also expects to receive to weather the crisis. Oh, it's good to be big. United's the first airline to detail the financial impact of the virus on its balance sheet, even though the information that it reported is still preliminary. Nevertheless, a $2.1 billion loss is big time. Now, airlines, including United, aren't expecting a rapid turnaround in demand, underscoring how, despite debates on when to reopen the economy and how, consumers aren't planning to return en masse to air travel in either the near or medium future. And that, of course, putting a lot of pressure on the airline stocks. United said revenue fell 17% in the first quarter, that its shares were down more than 3% in early morning trading.
Well, I don't know. Everybody thinks I'm crazy, Dave, because I says this is probably the safest time to fly. You know, because you know they're wiping everything down. The airplanes probably have never been cleaner than what they are now.
And unoccupied.
And unoccupied. Right?
I mean, I've seen a few photographs of some flights. I don't know if passengers or staff, airline, the airplane staff are taking these photos, but you see, you know, someone in row 30 on the one side, someone in row 25 on the other, and I mean, just like maybe a dozen, you know, in these 250-seat aircrafts. It reminds me, I remember flying good old Eastern Airlines back in, when was that, the 1980s, mid-1980s, when you could fly from D.C. National, now Reagan Airport when I lived there, to New York, LaGuardia, for $25, and then just hop in the subway and then get into town where I was meeting some friends. But that particular flight, just one that possibly the only one I remember like that, where it was virtually empty flying. I mean, it was a less than an hour flight. Still, there were at most maybe 25 or 30 of us on there. A little smaller plane, but still, it was times have changed.
When I was in the insurance business, I used to market the Southwest. You know, I had Utah, Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and so I did a lot of flying. I was usually only home on the weekends, and I loved it. I mean, I can remember being driven up to the airport, running to catch my plane. They would actually hold the plane, not because of me. They would hold the plane if somebody was late. And, you know, you just
they
run
wanted
from,
bodies.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you would just get off and run. You didn't have to go through any clearance or anything like that, and go right onto the plane. And they take off minutes after that. You could smoke. You could drink. You know, you could usually have, you were the only one to three to the seat, so you could, you know, pretty much spread out and everything. And that was fun flying then. You weren't part of the herd. And so, yeah, I get that. But so, yeah, I think it's a great time to be flying. My only concern about flying now, Dave, would be the maintenance. Did they send people home because of the virus? And would the maintenance still be up to power?
I would hope so. I would think so, although, and I'm not privy to the numbers, although we know that some maintenance staff have been furloughed, you know, just their legal requirements, not to mention their, you know, what their insurance companies still require. You know, they've got to be upkeeping maintenance.
What do you think?
But the pressure, yeah. I mean, they're less. Not pressure, but there are less airplanes to be maintained.
True.
So they're probably being able to do it with less staff. Again, that's hope as opposed to any kind of informed perspective.
So if you want to fly anywhere, I'm not sure where you can go, but
yeah,
or what you can do when you get there. But Mohammed El Arian, he's the chief economist for Alliance. He's looking at the economy to be minus 10 to minus 14% growth for the U.S. He said the distinct nature of this economic hit stemming from a health crisis, and this is all before the oil crash. The oil crash is going to be putting a whole different number on these. It's going to change everything, I think. I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. So, yeah, I think a lot of these numbers are going to change. So he's looking at 10% to 14%. I mean, I've seen numbers much lower than that, too, so he's probably being a little conservative. He's on every morning on CNBC. I think almost every day I see him on there, so retail.
These numbers, I think, Melody, are for the year. So I think they're pretty substantial estimates compared to the 4% and 5%, 6% numbers we've been seeing from other economists and organizations like the IMF. recently. Now, for the second quarter, we're seeing 25, 30, some say 40% decline in GDP.
But how would that be with what the oil is doing today, though, too? That's what I'm saying. I think these numbers were before the oil crash today.
Oh, clearly were.
Yeah, so yeah, they would clearly be a little bit worse, I would think.
Absolutely. But I guess my point was that El Arian's numbers at 10 to 14% were almost three times as pessimistic as the consensus we've been seeing prior to today. Anyway.
JCPenney, the bankruptcy clock is ticking. It skipped a mid-April interest payment. Its turnaround plans have been sidelined by the virus, and which has forced the closure of all the stores. Macy's, we talked about Macy's last week. Nordstrom, we talked about Nordstrom. They raised $600 million by placing a handful of its real estate assets into a separate company and borrowing against the new entity. I mean, it's just like, they're creative. You have to admit it. They're very creative, and they're... But this is the same thing that government is doing. This is how government does it, too. They create all these various ways to create debt. And we've created another break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. Just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again?
See these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. We had a little bit of a snafu there on Friday because we had technical difficulties in connecting to James Corbett. We took an early break, and then we just went out through the top of the hour, so, and we forgot to change it back. So we took an early break today, and we're going to go through the top of the hour, and then tomorrow we'll be back to our normal three segments of the program. So this is going to be where else do we want to head to next? Let's do something a little bit. We talked about retail. Anything else in the, how about the National Activity Index, Dave?
Yeah, this is something we haven't talked an awful lot about, but the Chicago Fed keeps this National Activity Index. Actually, they're several sub-indexes off of that that it carries too, that is released in a report every month. We're going to call it the NAI, National Activity Index. And that fell to minus 4.19 in March from plus 0.06 in February. Now, all four broad categories of indicators that make up the model or make up the model of the index made negative contributions in March, and three of the four categories decreased from February. Now, the NAI is a weighted average of 85 indicators of growth in national economic activity that are drawn from these four broad categories of data: production and income, employment, unemployment, and hours worked, personal consumption and housing, and sales, orders, and inventories. The index 3-month moving average decreased to minus 1.47 in March from minus 0.2 in February. Everyone, and including this index, likes a positive number. Now, following a period of economic expansion, an increasing likelihood of a recession has historically been associated with a moving average that's below minus 0.7. Now, the Fed, the Chicago Fed, also has this NAI diffusion index. That also, it's another 3-month moving average that moved down to negative 0.32 from negative 0.21. Of the 85 individual economic indicators, of the 85, 18 made positive contributions to the NAI in March, while 65 made negative contributions with two neutrals. So we'll continue to, I don't know if you want to talk about any more of the numbers, Melody, or want me to. Otherwise, we'll report back on this from time to time as, you know, the quarantining, stay-at-home orders either get extended beyond May 1st, or as it may, they may start to subside.
Well, you know, it always kind of cracks me up. I mean, and again, you know, it's always interesting to see what they have to say. And I think any of these numbers that are given out, I mean, they're just following the status quo. I don't think they're really taking it into true consideration what really is going on or the numbers. And I hate to say it, but even when some of these jobless claim reports coming out on Thursdays and so forth, in the very beginning, like the first one, we know from government, we heard from DC that, you know, well, if you don't have to report them all, don't. We're not getting all the true numbers. So we basically have to take the numbers that we're given. And, you know, Dave, it just kind of, I wonder, you know, the New York Fed pres doubts the economy won't return to normal in 2020. I mean, these people get paid millions of dollars. And that's the best that they can. He sees parts of the economy coming back online, but doubts growth will return to normal. Construction should be among the first to return. It's being outside, so yeah, that probably would be. Of course, that's the same comments that was echoed by the Philly Fed President Patrick Harker. Construction should be able to bounce back a little more quickly. Some of the other sectors, but we're still going to have some tough times ahead. And I think this truly puts, you know, a coating over everything, a rosy coating over everything. I think it's going to be far worse. I mean, it's not deep recessions they're talking about. It's deep depressions that they're talking about, Dave. And I don't know if you agree or not, but...
Well, yeah, I think this is more of a Captain Obvious type of speech. I certainly don't think there's any groundbreaking news or numbers in his comment, either Williams or Harker's comments. But no, I agree with you. You know, I just want to say one other quick thing about the Chicago Fed's NAI. Perhaps the most important thing is that all the numbers that all the indexes that came out of this report today suggest that economic growth has decreased substantially in March, such that we are in a full-fledged recession. Sorry, that escaped me in my initial comments.
So they're actually admitting now, they're actually publicly admitting and putting it on paper that we're in a full...
Oh, no. No, they're not saying that. It's just the numbers suggest that only the National Bureau of Economic Research declares recessions in the United States officially.
And they're closed because of the virus, right?
Well, I'm sure they're working from home.
Yeah. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce yesterday said its latest polls show that 1 out of 10 members say that they're less than a month away from permanently going out of business. The chamber head, Suzanne Clark, she was on Face the Nation yesterday. And also the poll showed that something like 50% of small businesses say that they were 8 weeks away from closing forever. And so, you know, she thinks that's why these government bridge programs are important. But, you know, they need to pay that back. So it's a little more difficult than just providing money to businesses and then they have to pay it back.
Yeah, a lot of them won't have to, though.
Well, they should have to. Nothing should be given as a grant. That I don't believe in. It should not be a grant.
Yeah, a lot of them won't have to keep their payroll up to snuff for, I believe, 8 weeks after they receive this loan money.
No, I, you know, if the government gives them money to get through this hard time, fine, but they need to pay it back. You know, it's just like Social Security recipients. If we're working and you make more money, guess what? You got to give it back. And it should be the same thing. You got to give it back. You know, because it puts more stress on the other taxpayers. So, you know, again, nobody's really getting ahead.
It's an election year.
Oh, that's right. How could I have forgotten that one? Oh, which is interesting. We were talking about the airlines, Boeing, and a couple of other little manufacturers around the U.S. So they're kind of gearing up to resume production this week. That's good news. These moves are coming amid pressure from President Trump. And again, I don't mean to be, but of course, I mean, they want the bailout, so they're going to do whatever the president wants. So they're going to reopen the economy, and President Trump wants to reopen the economy and resistance from governors who warn that there's not enough testing yet, which, you know, you think that the solution would be simple, Dave. Just give them the testing. That solves the problem. How hard is it?
Apparently it's a lot harder than it seems.
If that's all it takes, then do it. Good grief. That would put all it would just put everything, and maybe that's why. It would put everything to bed.
Yeah.
It would answer thousands of questions. Just do the darn testing. And I'm sorry, I'm not here to bash the president. It's not my job. But when I see something, when I hear something, I say something. I did have to laugh yesterday. I'm thinking, doesn't anybody else see this? Yesterday, I was flipping through the station. They were doing the daily briefing, which such a waste of time. What, 2.5 hours? Are you kidding me?
On a Sunday.
On a Sunday? So I saw it stopped. They were doing something, so I went on. I watched something else, and I think it was like an hour and a half later, I came back. I said, are you kidding me? It's still on? But he pulls out a swab. He pulls out a swab, showing that this is all that's needed for testing. And I really didn't get it myself, but he's showing this swab. And then he reaches in his pocket, and he pulls out two Q-tips. And he's like comparing it like he just, I don't know. Like it was one of the same. How hard is it that we can't have, well, you know, I don't know. How hard is it to get a stupid swab? But I'm thinking to myself, anyway, I just thought that was very bizarre in the many bizarre briefings for the past 2 months. Anyway, so of course Boeing is going to do whatever President Trump wants because they want the bonus money. They want the bailout money. And we know Boeing is Pacific Northwest's biggest employer, puts about 27,000 people back to work. And I do want these people to go back to work. Don't make it sound like I don't. I do want them to go back to work. But you still got to look at all, you know, behind the scenes kind of things. They're going to have staggered shift times. They're going to have to wear face masks and so forth. You have Bobcat, that's a farm equipment manufacturer, announced it will resume production with about 600 employees in Bismarck, North Dakota. My question is, what the heck are they going to be making? Who in the heck is going to be buying farm equipment? The farmers are dumping their food. The dairies are dumping their milk. They've already gone so far deep in debt from last year's tariffs and the flooding. Their suicide rate is high and rising. So who in the heck is going to be buying farm equipment? But that puts 600 people back to work. They probably got, oh, what was the cutoff, 500 employees, Dave, for the boat?
Yes.
For the, okay,
yes.
So they would not qualify. So again, yes, I want these people to go back to work, but how long are they going to be going back to work for? Is the demand that strong heading into the greatest recession of all time, recession slash most likely depression? How many machines are they going to build? Same way with Boeing. People are dumping their orders with Boeing. I mean, that all started happening when their Supermax, or whatever it was called. What was it called, Dave? Their Max?
Yeah, 737 Max.
Yeah. Killed people. And they knew it. They knew what the problem was.
Yeah, last week I think we reported on 150 additional cancellations of Boeing-manufactured aircraft. Now, I don't know if what kind of clauses were in those cancellation orders, if the reopening is going to affect any of them. But you raise very interesting questions, and we're in new territory, and I expect we won't know until we do.
Right. Yes.
This is
and all it would take would be testing.
Well, there you go.
Do I approve of testing everybody? No, I don't. That should be up to the individual. You want to go get tested? Hey, go. If you don't, fine. But at least there should be access. Give the governors what they want. Then they can't, you know. But anyway. So again, the openings of certain industries, yes, it's just a drop in the bucket. And of course, I would think, you know, Boeing, yeah, they have far more than 500 employees, but I'll guarantee you that was a handshake from government to get their bailout and so forth that they do this. So, anything else that you had like to add to that, Dave?
No, I was fascinated by this developing news item in Israel.
I know.
Lunchtime, multiple news outlets were reporting that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his longtime election rival Benny Gantz have reached an agreement to form a coalition government that would end a long year of political deadlock in that country. In a joint statement, officials from Netanyahu's Likud party and Gantz's Blue and White said the two men would meet tonight after making substantial progress in coalition talks over the weekend. We'll let you know more about this significant development as we learn the details in the coming days, Melody.
That is baffling, because you had Benny going after Bibi for corruption. Wasn't he hot on his tails?
Sure. Yeah, that's what he was. His campaign slogan is essentially saying that Netanyahu can't serve with these indictments, you know, on his shoulders.
So you throw away the indictments, all of a sudden little Bibi is all of a sudden a little angel, and the two of them are going to get to you. Just throw away all the bad stuff, and all of a sudden we're going to become partners.
Deals can be a beautiful thing, can't they, Melody?
Yes.
It'll be interesting to see if these indictments now go away. If Gantz will have the ceremonial title of prime minister, or just exactly how this coalition government is gonna take hold.
Wow, it is interesting, and I mean, I don't know enough to be involved to know their political parties and so forth, but I mean, you could just read the two headlines and all of a sudden see them shaking hands and them two making an agreement for a government. I mean, it's just like, hey, it's just part of the, it's just another day in the neighborhood.
I know.
But, it's just really incredible. Let's see, food pantries. Let's go down and talk a little bit about food pantries, because we know how, if you go to the store and so forth, how difficult it is. And we've seen these food pantries staying busy. We've seen the lines of thousands of people in their cars trying to get food. You have millions of people that have been furloughed, laid off. About 50% of the people going through the lines have never been here before, and that comes from the president of Graceworks, the president and CEO of Valencia Breckenridge. Just as demand is rocketing, however, many of the food bank sources are beginning to dry up. You have restaurants, hotels, resorts, many of which are shuttered or sharply limiting their operations, are no longer supplying them with food, while other suppliers are busy restocking grocery shelves. You have farmers. They have switched from shipping vegetables and meats in bulk to individual packaging for grocery stores. It's a perfect storm scenario, said Katie Fitzgerald, and she's the chief operating officer for Feeding America. Feeding America has seen an increase in demand from 98% of its member banks. The average increase for a member was 63%, while 95% of the association's food banks reported an increase in operating expenses.
Wow. Now, Congress included a significant boost for emergency food assistance in, I believe it was the CARES Act, Stimulus 3.0, but these leaders, food bank leaders, are warning that funding may take months to reach localities, while food bank content with a flood of need in the near term. $100 million that billionaire Jeff Bezos pledged to the association on April 2nd was already being deployed last week. In addition to finding ways to meet this new spike in demand, food banks have had to devise creative ways to distribute greater amounts of food while keeping both recipients and their staff safe from exposure to the virus. The San Francisco Marin Food Bank in California had built pop-up pantries after some of its previous 275 sites or so had to stop operating during the pandemic. The new sites, many of which are serving hundreds of people a day, stay open for longer hours and use open spaces such as parking lots to facilitate social distancing. Virtually all food banks, we're reading, are realizing the sharp increase in demand could continue for months, which their leaders are saying makes donations even more crucial than they usually are. For now, one thing's certain. Whatever food they do acquire is flying right off the shelves just as fast as it arrives.
You know, we only have about a minute left of this program, and if I don't get to finish it up today, we'll try and talk about it tomorrow. And you know what? Facebook, if you're on it, get off it. You know, I'm on it, and I think I'll be getting off of it. I don't do that much on it. But they are going to unveil county-by-county maps of people with symptoms of the virus. And they're going to update that on a daily basis. So if you're a person who just has a symptom, you'll be tracked. The company plans to begin running the surveys, which are being managed by professors at Carnegie Mellon, no surprise, university, globally this week, with the first results coming soon. Zuckerberg said today, since experiencing symptoms is a precursor to going to the hospital, becoming more seriously ill, these maps could be an important tool for governments and public health officials to make decisions on how to allocate scarce resources like ventilators and so forth. We'll be back tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. Think about it. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.